I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome to Face to Face. This is a show about change and about what's next. It's a show that wants to ask questions, peel back the layers of our average everyday experience, and go beyond scratching the surface. We interview amazing people with incredible ideas and stories who have done wild, weird, and wonderful things. Remember that imagination shared creates collaboration, and collaboration creates community, and community inspires social change. I'm David Peck, and this is Face to Face.
Well, welcome to Face to Face. We're joined by a very special guest here with us today. We have a documentarian, a filmmaker, a producer, a director. Nadine Pequeniza is here today to talk about her new film and probably a few other films, but her new film today, most importantly, Next of Kin. Nadine, thanks for joining me today.
Hi, David. Thanks very much for having me on the show.
So we clearly have lots to talk about. First of all, right out of the gate, congratulations on the film.
Thank you. Let's just give a quick shout out.
CBC Docs POV is where people can find this for the next few years at least, and it's download. It's free, right? I mean,
it's free. They can stream it online for
free. So basically, you need a bit of popcorn and a soft drink, and you're set.
You're set for a good 45 minutes.
Fantastic. So tell you what, Nadine, why don't you set a little bit of context for us? Before we dive in, it's the kind of story because it's you must have felt a little bit like Sherlock Holmes at a few points in this film.
Definitely. Definitely. We were following the stories for quite some time before we actually got anywhere. So, but let me back up and just introduce the idea of the film. So Next of Kin is a documentary about young people who are aging out of the system. So they've either been in youth shelters, some of them have been in foster care, but essentially they don't have strong connections with family. And so when they turn 19, a lot of the supports that they've been relying on for many years disappear. And so there's a program at a nonprofit in St. Catharines called RAFT. And that program tries to connect those youth with family members. So the detective aspect of the work that they do that you're speaking of is about trying to locate people that the teenagers have often been out of touch with for many, many years, sometimes from the time they were 1 or 2 years old. And so there is a lot of detective work that goes into trying to track down those family members. And the ultimate goal, obviously, is to try and establish some sort of social network for these young people as they transform into adulthood or try to make that leap. Because what we've seen over the years, over the last 40 years and across countries, is that children who are coming out of the system, who haven't had that strong connection with family and stability in their childhood, they really, the outcomes aren't good. So, you know, 60%, these are Ontario figures, 60% end up homeless, you know, 56% are dropping out of school. They suffer 2 times the rate of PTSD that war veterans do. And so the film is really about this program that's trying to improve the lives of young people who are in this situation.
The PTSD stat is astounding, and I know that, that kind of comes out in the film in a really clear and defined way near the end, which I really do want to talk about as that sort of that reveal of not just about that, but about our past and residential schools and so on. And it just seems to be something that creeps up in so many places. Can you know what I love about documentaries, Nadine, is they're about this on the surface, and then they're about all these other things once you start to peel back the layers. It's really quite remarkable about this kind of storytelling. And so you know, you've got comments on community and about addiction and about family and about finding our way home and about memory, you know, and are some things better left unsaid? I mean, there's just so many questions that we could ask about the film and about some of the things that you found out as you were, you know, digging deeper. What would you say, I don't know, what drew you into the project into the first place? I mean, was it a question? Was it a specific question? Was it an experience, somebody you met?
I've done over the course of my career a lot of films that have focused on children. I did a film earlier, actually it was my first feature film, about a woman who was losing her fourth child to the Children's Aid Services here. And she had an addiction issue that she was dealing with. And so I was filming with her over the course of 2 years that she tried to get her child back. I did another film about a 14-year-old in the United States who was convicted of armed robbery and sentenced to life without parole in prison. 15 to life was the name of that film. So I think I'm attracted to stories about young people because I guess because I see them as so vulnerable. And really what a disservice we do to young people as a society when we don't have the supports in place to help families, because really it's families that raise children, you know. It takes a village, but that family is the core. And so I just found myself over the course of my career, over the last 20 years, these issues kept coming back. And so I don't know if I look for them or they find me. In this particular case, the program that RAST runs in St. Catharines, I actually came into contact with the ED of that nonprofit because I was working on another film about social impact. So that's how I found this specific program. But the youth that we filmed with, Taylor and Jacob, who are the central subjects of the film, you know, they really, they touch my heart. They speak to me.
It's so interesting. At one point early on in the film, I think it's Jacob, and I'm sure we're going to talk a little bit more about his situation and so on, and looking for, well, for his family, really, but his father, I suppose, specifically, you know, he says, you know, oh, I think direct quote, family is so important.
And, you know, the kids who haven't had that growing up, I think they know that more than anyone. And so it's so central to who he is. And the questions that he wanted answered. You know, he hadn't seen his father since he was 6 or 7 years old. And, you know, he had a difficult relationship with his mother, which is why he couldn't stay there. He had lived with relatives for a period of time in his youth, and then ended up in the shelter system, had a brush up with the law, you know, had dropped out. All of the statistics that we talked about earlier were reflected in Jacob's experience. And so for him, you know, finding out why his father had left and why he didn't have a relationship with him, he wanted to understand that for himself. I mean, he had heard stories while he was growing up from different relatives, but he didn't really have a knowing, you know, firsthand knowledge of what had happened. You know, and so I think for him, yeah, finding his father was important.
Yeah, and there's so many, again, so many questions just around that notion alone. I my heart went out to him, and I mean to so many people in the film, really. You know, pretty young dad myself, and well, not that young, I suppose. But my hairline gives me away, Nadine. Let's just put it that way. But you know, he has that hockey card memory of his father, and I have, I kind of have a hockey card memory too, living in Montreal many years ago, early 70s, and waking up in the morning, my dad had been away, and waking up, and I can see it. I mean, I can taste the gum, you know, the pack of cards on the table. And so one of the things as a dad that I've really tried to do is to intentionally try to create wonderful memories, if that makes any sense at all. Not contrived, but you know, try to actually focus on that idea, because I found them so important to me, and I was just so struck by Jacob and sort of, I guess, that loss of memory, because he doesn't have those experiences with his dad, and refers back to this one clearly joyful memory that he's got over some hockey cards.
Well, that's, memory is so much about who we are, you know, so much about how we interpret the world and how we think about ourselves, and how we function has everything to do with memory. And so, yeah, I mean, imagine if you had one memory that you could draw on from your father. So it was amazing that this program was actually able to track him down, you know, and not only his father, but Jacob found his biological grandmother, you know, his father's mother, because his father had been in care. And as it turns out, his grandmother had also been in care. And then his great-grandmother in residential school. So you see that whole historical line and how it has fractured family over generations, that I think, obviously, you know, the youth who are involved in this program at RAFT are not always ending up with fairy tale endings.
Right, of course not.
A lot of the information that Jacob learned was difficult to digest and for him to comprehend and accept. But that's one of the reasons that RAFT helps these young people through the process. So it's not only finding the relatives, but it's also, you know, helping to navigate that new relationship. And one of the things that Jackie Winger, who was the RAFT worker who was working with Jacob, said to me was, you know, if we're not there, they're looking anyway. And so a lot of times, you know, young people will make these connections without having any support. And so for that reason, the program that RAFT offers, with all of these other supports with regard to counseling and housing and getting back into school, I mean, having that around them is important when they're going through this process. And it was for Jacob, because some of the things he discovered were difficult.
You know, it's interesting, and in Taylor's case, because you follow these two young people and their stories and sort of how they tease out, and like you say, they not everyone is going to end in a fairy tale ending, far from it. But I think early on in the film, she talks about somebody accepting her for who she is. And I mean, isn't this part of the role of a family? Or at least, isn't this the hope so part of a role of a family, of a mother and a father and of you know, and a family and friends? And Amanda, I think, sort of echoes that later when she says, you know, she just needs some people that she can rely on. And I couldn't help but think of this sense of brokenness and just, I guess, sadness. And I don't want to say emptiness, because that almost sounds too judgmental, but mm-hmm. this desire, this longing for something else and something other. Does that make sense?
Well, yeah. We're human beings. We desire connection, you know? And in spending the year that I did with Taylor, I don't think I've seen anybody so isolated, you know? And the writing that she does, that she spoke about in the film, you know, this sort of group writing that she does online is very important to her, because that's her connection. But she doesn't go to school, you know, she doesn't work. She had Amanda as her worker, but her relationship with her mother, and she had a stepbrother and a stepsister, it's so broken that she just doesn't have that unconditional love that many of us associate with family. And so I found Taylor's story exceptionally difficult for that reason.
Where does responsibility come into this for you? I mean, did you ever, as a filmmaker, as a storyteller, you know, I don't know, drive home from a day and say, but man, who I want to wring somebody's neck, you know? Like, so how did this happen? How did we wind up here, you know? I mean, it's never, it seems to me, it's rarely black and white in with family dynamics, and we've all got a story of a particular sort. But did you ever feel that sense?
Absolutely. And oftentimes it was hard sorting through, I mean, because everybody has their memories or version of history.
Right.
That they cling to, and trying to figure out, you know, who was, I don't want to say telling the truth, but who to believe or who to understand. So, I mean, that's what I try to bring to my filmmaking, and every time that I speak to someone, everybody has their own truth and their own experience. And so I did also meet with Taylor's mother, you know, and tried to understand where she was coming from. And in the course of filming, as we were looking for Taylor's father, we found out that Taylor's mother had actually been in a shelter herself when she was pregnant with Taylor, and that she had been involved in child services herself. And so it was interesting, the parallels in Taylor and Jacob's stories, in that both of their parents had been themselves involved with child welfare services. So it's, when you ask about how does this happen, and I don't tend to lay blame, because I don't think there's ever one person that's responsible for something. And this is, you know, when you do these films about social issues and social justice, you start to realize how important the entire community is to the success of individuals. And so just seeing what their parents had been through, you start to understand, you know, how complex these relationships are, and what we really have to be paying attention to when we're talking about child welfare, because we're really talking about family welfare.
Do you think, can you say, because of this sort of It's interesting. Isn't one of the opening or the opening line of the film one of the RAF workers talking about herself as a private investigator? I think there's
that's Jackie,
yeah, and I'm old enough to remember Jim Rockford from the Rockford Files way back. It's one of my fave shows as a kid growing up. You know, finding out all this information, peeling back these layers, is there ever a sense that maybe I don't know, would have been better not to bring this stuff to the surface? You know, I mean, that old school, maybe it's not so old school, but let's just sweep this under the carpet and you know, it'll be better that way.
Mm-hmm. Well, some people do choose mm-hmm. to deal with these things that way, and it works for them. You know, one of the things about Jacob and Taylor, the program RAFT, it's initiated and led by the youth. So the program is available, and if someone in the shelter, so they've all been at the RAF shelter,
right.
That's how they find out about the program. If they want to find a biological family member, if they want to reconnect someone that's a distant in their history, then they initiate the process. So it's not that the search was bringing these things to the surface, because they were already at the surface. And Taylor says at the beginning of the film that she had tried to
right.
look for her father, you know. So these things, they're there and they're present. And some people do need to find answers. And, you know, talking to Jackie and Amanda, a lot of the youth that they deal with are looking for these answers. But, you know, if someone decides that they don't need to know that, and their life is okay as
right.
it is, and they feel that they can move, they
right,
can move forward.
Right.
There's no reason to dredge up the past. But, I mean, I think for the youth that get involved in this program, and certainly the ones that are in Next of Kin, things aren't going so well. And so they're looking for answers.
Yeah, I definitely, you know, Nadine, I definitely come from the school of thought that says, no, we need to talk about this. Like, I need to know, right? And there's healing in that. And yet, some might argue, and I think this is, you know, when you talk about things like transgenerational trauma and PTSD, and I've even, you know, been doing some research lately on epigenetic trauma. And so, you know, there are some folks who say, you know, what right do you have to stir that up? You know, and yet I'd like to think the truth is, you know, the truth will set you free. You know what I mean? But like you say, if you know, we don't know unless we walk a mile in somebody else's shoes. How can we really know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, there were two other young people that I was filming with that we didn't end up including in the film because they decided, you know, partway through the process that they didn't want to partake anymore.
Oh, interesting.
Just too
emotional?
It was a very complicated story. It was a brother and sister who had been in care when they were 2 years old, were adopted, and then the sister was molested by the adoptive father. The adoptive parents split up, and the young boy ended up going back into care and spent many years in group homes. And so he decided that he wanted to find his biological parents, but unfortunately, and this ostracized him from the adoptive family that
right.
he had. Now, you might think he was already ostracized because of what had happened, but both children maintained a connection with the adoptive father. So it was a very difficult... They did find their biological father, but it caused a lot of strain between the adoptive and the biological, and so that put incredible pressure on the young man. So he asked not to be... Well, he decided not to go further with the family finding program, and he asked not to be in the film,
right.
and so we respected that.
So I always, what do you come away from? You spent a year with Taylor. How long were you alongside of Jacob's story?
Same amount of time. We started filming with both of them at the same
time.
So
what do you come away with? You know, obviously you're hoping your viewer comes away with certain things, and you know, you're taking us on a journey and you want us to ask new questions and so on. And I have to tell you, I mean, it worked for me. I mean, standing there at that one scene, and I'm assuming it was Bathurst and King Street, somewhere around that area, where Deborah's watching her son from a distance. I mean, it's heartbreaking to watch. To imagine that history, that all the things that she wasn't able to experience and must have been experiences at that moment. It's just, heartbreaking as a dad. What do you take away from this, Nadine?
The importance of family. Mm. And how important permanence is, you know, stability when young people are growing up. And that separating children from their biological parents isn't necessarily the best way to improve their lives. And that if we have a system where, I mean, if you think about the power that the child welfare system has to come in and take a child out of their home, I mean, they don't even have to prove anything in a court. If they suspect that the child is in danger, they can remove that child. And while we understand the necessity of that, you know, if a child's life is in danger, it's still a tremendous amount of power. And so you would think that if we allow that as a society, we have an incredible responsibility to make sure that when we remove that child, that their life improves. And what we've seen from the statistics is that we're not doing that. And in fact, the results are horrible. You know, when you're talking about 60% homeless or 56% dropping out, the involvement in the criminal justice system, it's terrible. And so I'm not saying there's an easy answer,
right,
but we have to pay more attention to what we're doing. We have to make sure that when we intervene in a family that needs help, that we do something that's in the interests of the child and the parents.
It's interesting. I work in development, and my listeners will know this already, but you know, you're writing a proposal to let's say work on water and sanitation issues in some community in Myanmar. This is not about paper. This is not about administration or bureaucracy or global affairs. I mean, it's all of those things, but this is really about families, men, women, boys and girls that are going to be impacted, right, by this. And I think that's what I'm hearing from you. You know, let's not detach that human component. I love your phrase of how important permanence is, and this incredible responsibility we have if we're going to do something like that. This is an incredibly what's the word I'm looking for here? Just it's deeply relational. It's never just bureaucratic, right? It's never just the right thing to do. It's way more than that.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. Since making this film, I met somebody who had two foster children in a program that was a foster to adopt program. So Child Services had decided that it was very unlikely that the biological parent was going to be able to reclaim custody of the kids. And so they're in a foster to adopt program. Well, they had these children for over a year, and then they got a call on Friday saying that the kids were being returned to their biological mother on the Monday. Yeah, so they were devastated. But what happened was the kids went back to their mother, and then the mother and the foster parents developed a relationship. And so they're co-parenting these two children. Yeah. And this is, you know, it's 6 years on now. And the children go back and forth between the houses. And the biological mother, you know, she had her issues, but she's since remarried. You know, she has three children of her own, including these two. And then her partner has three of his own children. And so, you know, they appreciate the break. To be able to have the kids go and stay somewhere else for a weekend or every other weekend. And the parents who were fostering to adopt have their children that they were looking for. And the kids have, you know, two sets of parents that really love them.
Interesting. Interesting. Well, case study, I suppose, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's other ways
right.
to look at, you know, the child welfare system. And clearly the way we've been doing it is not working. So we have to start looking at other
Well, it's got
models.
More of a community feel to it, that family. Right?
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
The circle,
yes,
the circle's
do.
Growing. At mm-hmm. what point, how did you know that this film was going to be about, you know, about the residential school system? You know, you touch on the PTSD, the trans. I don't know that you guys talk about transgenerational trauma, but it's certainly there. Was that present for you going in, or was that more of a reveal along the way?
I would say the extent of it, the fact that it was over, you know, three generations of children being in care, that was surprising. Although early on, Jackie went to consult with an Indigenous cultural advisor, Elaine Bearwald, in the film, to talk about trying to find Jacob's mm-hmm. father, because, you know, there was some indication on his birth records that they got from CAS that he had Indigenous background.
Right.
And so, I mean, Elaine alluded to very early on that it was likely there was a residential school trauma in the family, and that it would be difficult to find any records because most of the records, as she said, are whited out.
Right.
You know, that these children, when they were taken from their families in the 60s scoop, often they're, you know, their heritage was disguised. You know, on Jacob's father's birth certificate, there were five different cultural heritages. It was purposely obfuscated. Mm-hmm. So we had an idea. Certainly,
sure.
Elaine let us know what we could expect. But I was astounded when we found out, you know, where Jacob's
right.
story led. I was astounded.
Can you talk a little bit about the 60s scoop? As I dig a little bit deeper, I was recently at an event and talking to a few First Nations folk just about a little bit about everything, and you know, Truth and Reconciliation and Commission and all of the implications and all that I didn't know, and I guess in my own way, you know, trying to say sorry but the 60 scoop is something I didn't know very much about at all until I saw your film. I guess I've heard reference to it before, but it's kind of, you read this stuff, Nadine, and you just go, really? Did that actually happen? Did we really go there?
Mm-hmm. The 60 scoop is part of the cultural genocide mm. that's taken place in this country. And so after the residential schools, the 60s scoop started in the 60s with government and churches taking Indigenous children from their families and placing them in the child welfare system. And what we were talking about earlier about giving them new identities, new mm-hmm. heritages, you know, writing new birth certificates to really make it to try to change their Indigenous heritage, as they said with the residential schools, to take the Indian out of the child. And so they call it the 60s scoop, but it went on until the
80s. Until the 80s. About 20,000 children. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not sure of the exact number, but it was significant. And now the government is looking at reparations
right.
for that.
Well, and it's interesting to me to presuppose that you could ever really do anything that would really repair the damage that's been done is kind of an interesting position to take. It seems to me I think one of the things for me that your film really reveals is just the impact of those, you know, and I think that's where I was going with that responsibility question. You know, I'm not interested in blame, but I am interested in the choices that I'm going to make tomorrow, and hopefully they're going to be maybe just a little bit better than the ones I made today, if you know what I mean. And
well, Deborah, Michael's father, so Jacob's father, Deborah, Jacob's father's mother,
right,
Deborah,
yes,
who found her son on the street after 40 years, was taken in the 60s scoop. And she said to me, you know, the money,
right,
it's not gonna repair this. It's not going to fix this. That doesn't mean that they don't want
right.
the assistance, or the assistance couldn't be put to some
right.
use,
yep.
but in no way is it going to rectify this situation. I mean, I was reading some statistics the other day. People often talk about the overrepresentation of African Americans in the judicial system in the United States. Well, the overrepresentation of Indigenous people in our criminal justice system here in Canada is much higher than in the United States. I think in some provinces it's as much as 10 times
wow.
higher. If you look at, you know, the population, Indigenous population versus the rest of Canada and their representation in the jails. So we've got a serious problem in this country, and it can all be traced back to these programs,
right.
the residential schools, the 60s scoop.
It really is mind-boggling, and you know, to say that we're scratching the surface is an understatement at best. Nadine, as I suspected, our conversation was going to have to wrap up sooner than I had hoped, and so I often will ask my guests to come back for part two, and I hope we can do that, and maybe we can just sort of wrap up here a little bit, because I think there's a direct connection from what little you've told me offline about your next film or your new film, The Invisible Heart. Can you tell us a little bit about that, and maybe some of those connections might be?
Sure. Well, the connection is actually, so The Invisible Heart is about something called social impact bonds, which is a new way of financing social programs. Controversial in the sense that it asks private investors to invest in programs for homeless people or foster kids or people who are at risk of entering jail. And if that program is successful, then the government repays the private investor plus a profit, so a return on their investment. And so there's all sorts of questions about what sort of incentives does that create when you start paying people a profit for helping the most vulnerable in our society. So that's the question that The Invisible Heart asks. But the connection between the two films is, while I was making The Invisible Heart, that's how I met the executive director at RAFT, the program that runs the Family Finding Service. So Mike Lethby is his name, was at the time developing a social impact bond and hoping to be one of the first to launch here in Ontario. And they had a program specifically around youth homelessness, trying to prevent youths at risk of becoming homeless. So it was an interesting, innovative program that they'd done some piloting with in the St. Catharines area, and he wanted to expand it to Hamilton and another area. I can't remember the name of it, but another jurisdiction close by. So that's how I found out about Family Finders, was through making The Invisible Heart, which will be on TVO January 22nd.
Wow, you've been busy.
I've been busy, yeah, but I'm taking a little break
good.
Now.
Good. Glad to hear it. And of course, this film, Next of Kin, is playing on, I'm gonna get this right, CBC Docs POV. And if you go to cbc.ca, you can find it. They're going to be there for, I was going to say in perpetuity, Nadine, but it's about 4 to 6 years, isn't it? But the goal is to hopefully watch it sooner than that.
It'll be there for 6 years, but yes, watch it. Watch it now if you can, and you can share the link. It'll be there. It's 44 minutes well spent.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much for your time today. We've been talking with Nadine Pequeniza about her new film, Next of Kin. Make sure you check it out online. Nadine, thanks a lot for your time today. I really do appreciate it.
Thanks, David. I enjoyed talking with you. Thanks very much.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.